Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Aadhar Housing Finance Q1 FY27 earnings conference call hosted by DAM Capital. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand over the conference to Mr. Sanket Chheda from DAM Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, very good morning to all of you. We have with us the management team of Aadhar Housing to discuss the Q1 results. From the management side, we have Mr. V.G. Anand, who is the MD, Mr. Rajesh Viswanathan, who is the CFO, and Mr. Sanjay Moolchandani, who is the head of FPA and Investor Relations. We also have D.O. Shankar Tripathi, who is the Executive Vice Chairman. Without further ado, I'll hand the call over to Rishi sir for his opening remarks. We'll follow that up with question and answers. To you, sir.
Thank you so much, Sanket, and a very good evening to all of you. Thank you for joining us today to discuss Aadhar Housing Finance performance for first quarter FY27. We start the new financial year on a steady note, continuing the momentum we had built through FY26. As you would recall, we had closed the last year crossing a very important milestone of 30,000 crores in AUM, and in quarter one FY27 has been all about carrying that execution rigor forward with disciplined growth, calibrated risk, and continued investment in productivity across our branch network. Our AUM, as of 30th June 2026, stood at INR 31,364 crores, a growth of 18% YOY. For Q1 FY27, a disbursement of 2,036 crore is reported on check clearance basis. Disbursement on check handover stands at 2,359 crores, which is on a like-to-like basis growth of 19% YOY. Effective quarter one, we have taken a step of transitioning our loan accounting to check clearance basis model of disbursement recognition, which is a forward-looking approach and is a significant milestone in our commitment to governance, transparency, and putting customer at the forefront. Just reiterating, if we were to compare disbursement on check handover basis, then the disbursement in quarter one FY27 is 2,359 crores, which is a growth of 19% on YOY basis. This transition needed not only systemic changes but also an alignment of the entire operating model. Having taken this step, as we move ahead, we are firm and stick with our medium-term guidance of 20% AUM growth, 20% profit growth, 17%-18% disbursement growth for the full year. Next three quarters, we are targeting a disbursement growth of upward of 20%. Our portfolio continues to remain fully secured and retail in nature, with a balanced mix of home loans, which is at 73%, and non-home loan at 27%. We continue to maintain a well-diversified book with an average ticket size of 11 lakhs, 60% loan-to-value ratio, which remains within our comfort levels. The salaried segment continues to be 55% of our AUM. Balance transfer out during the quarter in question stood at 5%, which is one of the lowest BT out rates in the last 8 to 10 quarters and improved by 20 basis points as compared to Q1 FY26. It was supported by a focused retention effort and data-driven customer engagement. On the operating environment, demand for low-income housing finance continues to remain healthy and structurally supported. It continues to be largely end-user-based and first-time home buyer-driven, particularly in the emerging markets where we have deliberately built a strong franchise, which gives us comfort that this growth is not speculative in nature. Our approach, as always, has been to protect spreads rather than chase yields, which we are doing by tilting the mix towards emerging branches, by staying disciplined on loan against property, and by continuing to drive productivity per branch and per employee so that operating leverage does the work that pricing cannot. Even after a 15 basis points reduction in our RPLR effective February 2026, our spreads have held at 5.8% as on June 26. On asset quality, our portfolio continues to perform well. Collection efficiency remains strong at 99%. Gross NPA stood at 1.31%, an improvement of 3 bps on YOY basis. Stage 2 comes in at 3.3%, continuing to show an improvement by 40 bps on a YOY basis. As we have said before, the first line of defense for us is always the bounce rate, and this has remained stable throughout the quarter. We remain watchful of two external factors that the broader industry has also flagged: the ongoing geopolitical uncertainty around the West Asia situation and its resulting impact on segments like fuel-dependent trade and travel, and the monsoon outlook given its bearing on the rural and semi-urban cash flows. Our exposure to NRI-linked customer segment continues to be minimal, and our underwriting teams are tracking lead indicators closely at the branch level, as they always do, rather than making any broad-based tightening. On distribution, as on June 26, our network stands at 628 branches across 22 states and covering 550-plus districts, in line with our calibrated, need-based expansion approach. We continue to see most of our new branches, particularly in the smaller deep impact ones, reach productivity level within our expected 9 to 15 months window. And that discipline remains central to how we think our cost to income is controlled. Our geographical diversification remains strong, with no single state contributing disproportionately to our AUM. Our approach of combining branch expansion with productivity improvement of existing branches continues to support our sustainable growth. Let me briefly touch upon our AI initiatives. We are institutionalizing AI as Aadhaar's operating backbone, a six-layer AI architecture embedded across origination, underwriting, surveillance, collection, and retention, with every engine tied to a tracked outcome like NPA, turnaround time, cost to income, retention, and yield. Further, we are building 5 proprietary reusable platforms spanning across document intelligence, voice intelligence, decisioning intelligence, and enterprise assist layer and management intelligence that we believe compound into a genuine competitive advantage over a period of time. Overall, Q1 FY27 has been a quarter of steady, disciplined execution. We remain confident of delivering our medium-term guidance of 20% AUM, sustained profitability, and industry-leading asset quality while staying alert to the environment around us. Aadhaar remains committed to its mission of enabling home ownership for low-income families while delivering consistent and sustainable returns for stakeholders. With this, I would now hand over to Rajesh, our CFO, to take you through the financial performance in detail. Rajesh, over to you.
Thanks, Rishi. Good evening, everyone. I would like to take you all through the financial performance of Q1 FY27. In Q1 FY27, our AUM has grown by 18% on a YOY basis. Our overall borrowings as on 30th June 26 stood at 20,000 crores compared to 16,876 crores a year before this. The growth of borrowings is 19%. The borrowings mix as at 30th June 26 is 49% from banks, NHB share is 24%, NCD share is 17%, ECB share is 7%, and others is 3%. Our incremental borrowings for quarter 1 FY27 was 2238 crores, which came in at 7.3%. In Q1, fresh NHB borrowings were 746 crores at 6.9%, which included AHF borrowing of 149 crores at 4.3%. The exit cost of funds as at 30th June 2026 stood at 7.7% as on versus 8% a year before. In terms of fixed and floating nature of our book, 78% of our borrowings and 73% of our assets are on a floating basis. Undrawn sanctions on 30th June 26 is 991 crores. Liquidity as we ended quarter 1 FY27 stood at 2371 crores. Portfolio yield exit is 13.5% in quarter 1 FY27, Hence, the exit spread stood at 5.8% as at 30th June 2026. Our cost-to-income ratio for quarter 1 FY27 stood at 36.3%. Included in total expenses is 14 crores related to fresh ESOPs which was granted in Jan 26. So there's a P&L charge of about 14 crores in quarter 1 FY27 which was not there in quarter 1 FY26. GNPA as at 30th June 2026 is 1.31% as compared to 1.34% in Q1 FY26. As at 30th June 26, our Stage 3 provision coverage ratio stands at 34%. Capital adequacy ratio for Q1 FY27 stood at 42.9% for Tier 1 and 0.5% for Tier 2. Our Q1 FY27 PAT stood at 282 crores compared to 237 crores in Q1 FY26, resulting in a growth of 19%. Q1 FY27 ROA and ROE is 4% and 14.7% respectively. The number of employees as at 30th June was 5671 employees. With this, we open up for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Renish from ICSI. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a steady number, despite the challenging quarter. Sir, my first question is on the asset yield, right? So just wanted to understand how we are managing asset yield, so well, and that despite the 15 bits PLR cut in Feb, and intense competition, we have been able to sustain yields on sequential basis. So, what are the things we are doing it differently, sort of, which is helping us sustaining these yields, during such a tough environment? I mean, is it driven by some changes in pricing policy or maybe AUM mix change, different customer segment, or maybe different ticket size? So, just wanted to understand from you, sir, how we are able to manage yields even in such a tough environment.
Thank you, Renish. And maybe on a lighter note, one correction that it was not a challenging quarter. I think the quarter was good. While, we took a conscious call of looking at disbursement on clearance, I think it was a well-informed call. And I would say it was slightly delayed because of the systemic changes that we were wanting to do. So not a challenging quarter. Yes, a Middle East issue, etc., has been playing around. But
I was referring to that only.
there are two, three things to it, and I referred in my opening speech as well. As an organization, we are not overexposed. Rather, I would not say substantially exposed to NRI and NRI loans because of the segment that we deal with. Second is the pockets which where there are certain challenges where NRI exposure is large. Our exposure in those states are very low. We follow that thumb rule of no state contributing on AUM incremental disbursement and distribution greater than 15%. We've been following for the last, 5 to 7 years. And that has, and today on hindsight, if I look at the strategy that we had adopted about 5 years back, it is playing out very well. Then our second strategy on urban and emerging, Renish, is helping us maintain the yields. And if you recall, couple of quarters back on the same call we had called out urban emerging strategy how this would eventually start balancing out our not only the yields but also the ticket size. And while in the market we see the ticket size has substantially jumped for a lot of players, our ticket size still remains has moved from 10.4 to only 11 lakhs because the emerging has started to play out. Similarly, even on yields, that was your question, even on yields, while urban sees a little bit of more competition, the emerging locations help us manage the yields. So I think that strategy of our distribution being large enough, we being in tier 3, tier 4 locations substantially, and the urban emerging is playing out for us.
Okay. Or is this something to do with, let us say, the high yielding, state contribution increasing versus, let us say, the mature market contribution remaining static?
No, I would not say that, because our contribution from all the major states have been stable state. In fact, if you look at this particular quarter, and I'll give you an example, our contribution from Delhi has increased slightly, which is a state which gives us lower yield. In spite of that, we've been able to maintain the yield. So there is no substantial change in the contribution from any particular states, Ranish.
Okay. Great, sir. Sir, my second question is, more on a strategy front for medium term. So obviously we keep on hearing from various industry participants about increasing competition in this space and its corresponding impact on the yields. So, sir, what is your assessment? I mean, if one is to assume that, given the strong historical performance of the space, it will keep on attracting many new entrants, which might be leading to aggressive loan pricing. So from others' perspective, how are we positioned to sustain, this 20% growth in medium term, and more importantly, within our, a spread guidance range of 5.5%?
So Ranish, even as we speak today, June quarter, we've ended the book yield at book spread at about 5.8%. We have always guided the market that at any given point in time, we will be a company which will be a company with a spread of 5.5% upward.
Okay.
And that is where, again, I will come back to my urban emerging strategy today. Out of the 628 branches, approximately 300 or 350 branches plus happen to be in the emerging locations. Emerging gives me substantially high yields compared to urban locations. So you talk about, new entrants coming, then we will have to start looking at which segment they are coming. They are primarily, as we read the industry, they are coming in the affordable segment. We are one notch below in the low income segment, Will there be an overlap between what others do and what we do? Yes, there will be definitely a 5-7% overlap. But if our emerging strategy plays out well, which we are seeing early green shoots, it is playing out very well. We are very confident that we will always be a company upward of 5.5, and that we have maintained over a period of time.
Okay, got it, sir. And just last thing on the disbursement side. So what is the July disbursement number? I mean, just wanted to get a sense, despite this recognition, policy change, how are we placed to compensate or maybe the offset then impact which you had to take in Q1?
So Ranish, as I told you, as I told on the opening statement that we have given, if it were a like-to-like disbursement, which means check handover to check handover, our growth is 19%. Mm. But since we moved to check realization, obviously the growth numbers are slightly lower. By strategy, the numbers that I have not done check realization moves to quarter two. So quarter two numbers should be, and there is no reason why I should have a disbelief around it, should be close to 25% or upward of 23-24%. And as I look at June, we are already at the last day of, as I look at July, we are already at the last day, and we should be hitting a number very close to 900 crores.
Okay. So I think Q2 itself, you will compensate the loss which we have saw in Q1.
I will not say the entire, and I will not term it as loss, but the entire business that is getting carry forward, it generally happens over a couple of quarters. But yes, it will substantially, quarter two will substantially cover up for the shortfall of quarter one.
Okay. Great, sir. Sir, thank you and best of luck, sir.
Thank you so much, Ranish.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the question. So firstly, with respect to this check realization, the impact was only on disbursements or even on the interest income? There was a circular which was issued. So was there any impact in terms of the interest income recognition as well in any of the line items in this particular quarter? any which way, like, yields are quite flat, so doesn't appear to be there, but just wanted to clarify that, yeah.
Not major, Kunal. I think we will also start recognizing interest only when the check gets cleared. So to that extent, there will be a 2-3 day impact. It will not be material.
Okay, so hardly 2-3 days kind of an impact in the interest income.
Correct.
Okay. And secondly, in terms of the employee cost, not looking at year on year, but sequentially, if I look at it, so ESOP cost was there last time as well, and it continues this quarter. What could have been the reason for the sequential increase? Because last time also the overall employee cost was higher because of the incentives, volume linked incentives which would have been paid. So we have not seen any improvement on the employee cost front. So besides that, what has led to the higher employee cost? And secondly, on the overhead, it appears maybe it's managed very well. It's hardly up like 5% year on year, and also down like more than 25% quarter on quarter. Right. So was it like more like a structural one, or again it has a one off and maybe the employee cost getting offset by the overhead cost? Yeah.
So basically, On operating cost, typically the fourth quarter you'll have some contests and competition expenses, etc., would get built in over there. So that is more of a quarter four sort of an event. That will not apply typically in quarter one. Having said that, if we manage to do anything like 10-11% growth in the full year on non-employee cost, I think we would have done a very good job. In terms of increase between sequential quarter on employee cost, that is mainly because of the annual increment, which is typically in the range of approximately 10-12%, which would have come in the quarter one of the current year. Otherwise, then there is no chunky item which is basically sitting in the Q1 FY27 cost. And Q1 FY27 versus Q1 FY26, reason for the 27% increase in the Y-on-Y basis is predominantly because 14 to 15 crores of quarterly
is not
there in the last year. If you adjust for that, I think the growth would be approximately 14-15% even on employee cost, which more or less is about 11% increment which you would have given out.
Sure. And in terms of this rise in GS2, GS3, would we still say it's more of a seasonal and we will be able to pull it back through the fiscal, because you any which way indicated that bounce rates have been stable? So was like collection efficiency strong enough and we will be able to pull it back, and even like 40 basis points of credit cost will eventually come down and the full year credit cost would settle much lower?
Yeah, I think if you look at it historically, Kunal, for all of you who track us, if you look at it, say this is more of a seasonal quarter, and for the last 2-3 years, this has been a phenomenon that the first quarter credit cost remains between 40 to 45 bips, and as we end the year, the credit cost comes and settles down about 23 to 24 bips. I think we are fairly confident. Before you look at last year, 1.34% was headline NP, and we ended the year at 1.08 to 1.1%. I think we are quite confident of holding the 1.1% level as we end the year, and I think that would mean a credit cost will again settle down anywhere between 23 to 25 bips.
The reason to ask was couple of players, they have shown very limited increase. They have been able to manage it quite well despite the seasonality. So that's the reason for the question, yeah.
No, I think, in our case, we normally see quarter one, because of seasonality, going up anywhere between 30 to 35 bips. In our case, now it has gone up by 25 bips, so, and 22 bips rather. And we are quite confident of pulling it back to 1.1% level as we end the fiscal, and with a credit cost charge to about 23 to 25 bips on the P&L. Rishi, you were adding.
Yeah, I was just adding, Kunal. You know, what gives us more confidence is that on a YOY basis, a 3 bips reduction in NP and a 40 bips on stage 2, that gives us more comfort on how we are going to be ending the year. So,
okay, sure, got it, yeah. Thanks, that answers all the questions, yeah.
Thank you, Kunal.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shreya from Nomura. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi, thank you for the opportunity. My question is on your liquidity that you mentioned of 2371 crores. So in terms of how many months worth of liquidity you're holding, what would that be? What was it in June? Where did you keep it in March? Is there a pile of of liquidity that you did, and any color on how you think the cost of fund would move through the remaining three quarters. That's my only question.
Very important point on liquidity is that if you take the liquidity and you compare it to our overall borrowings, was 20,000 crores. So if you look at 2371 over 20,000 crores, the percentage will be higher than 10%. But throughout the quarter, we try to keep a liquidity of anywhere between 7 to 8%. This typically goes up towards the end of the quarter because there are drawdowns at the end of the quarter. So to that extent, you will see a higher liquidity which happens at the end of the quarter. But throughout the quarter, we try to maintain a 7 to 8% of borrowings as a liquidity buffer. Coming back to the cost of funds, first quarter has been where we have seen very limited movement in cost of funds. But if you look at the way the market public information is there. There's a general view that the interest rates may go up. We have not seen it happening till the month of July, for example, for us. But having said that, one good thing that we have in our company is that 75% of our assets can be repriced. So typically, if we have any pain on our existing borrowings getting repriced by banks on the floating rate book, we will also, as per our RPLR model and after taking necessary approvals of our ALCO and board, be able to pass it on to our customers if the need be. And we believe that at least we don't see that happening definitely in a quarter or maybe two quarters. And that is the way we are reading it currently, but things may change. But as we read it currently, we don't see any imminent impacts happening in this current quarter and probably even the next quarter.
Right. And sir, what would be your view on, say, if these interest cost of fund rates remain very volatile, would you want to keep your customers protected and not pass on volatility? What would be your view on that?
Yeah, see, typically what would happen in a volatile scenario, what will happen is a bank will also not adjust its MCLR so proactively. For example, they will also want to wait it out to see whether it is a permanent impact or a temporary impact. If they feel there's some sort of permanency to the impact, then they will obviously impact the MCLR of that. Incremental cost of funds do keep changing, especially in the capital markets, and that is where we are very specific. Wherever the interest rate there is an opportunity, we go and raise funds in the capital markets. Otherwise, we step away from capital markets. So, having said that, as I said, volatility, we do not generally pass it on to customers. We also wait for it to be permanent, and it should hit our balance sheet. Once the higher interest rates hits our numbers, then only we will pass it on to the customers, because we have a very robust RPLR model, and it has to pass the stress of the RPLR model before we can start passing on to customers. Any 1 month or 2 month impacts which we see in the model, we generally do not pass it on to the customer. We wait it out and then only pass it on to customers.
Got it. So one follow-up question, what you shared about your strategy of expanding into the emerging markets, but say in the more the markets away from the tier 2 markets, is there any demand side challenges that you're facing in those segments? I'm not talking about competition, but is there any demand side challenges in tier 1, 2 cities that you might be facing in terms of lower number of files coming to the branches, etc.?
You're talking about tier 1, tier 2 cities, or are you talking about the emerging locations?
No, non-emerging in your portfolio, tier 1, 2.
Urban locations are growing at a larger speed, and that's where I said, we'll have to do the balancing with emerging also start to grow at a larger speed. So urban demand is slightly more than what we had expected, at least in the last two quarters that have passed by.
Okay, so there's no demand side issues that you are...
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
Not that we are seeing any.
All right. Okay. Thank you. This is useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shreya.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidhesh from Investec. Please proceed.
Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my first question is on disbursement recognition. I think in Q1 FY25 also we have made some changes with respect to the disbursement recognition. There was an RBI circular at the point in time. So can you help me to understand what was the difference at that time and what is the difference this time, which impacted our disbursement?
Yes, hi Nitesh. Nitesh, you know that you are referring to the RBI circular which we had implemented in quarter one of last financial year. There, if you can take a minute here to explain, you know, the process is sanction, disbursement, check, handover and realization. These are the four major steps in the journey of how disbursements, how the process happens. Earlier, we used to recognize disbursements as disbursements. The moment it would get disbursed in the system, we would start recognizing the interest. From there, with respect to the RBI circular, we moved to something called check handover, check being handed over to the consumer. That actually happened in quarter one of FY26. And now, from the check handover to realization, we realized that there is a gap of anywhere between 5 to 7 days, and we have eliminated this gap of 5 to 7 days and moved to real-time realization. So when the check gets realized to either the seller account or the customer account, as the case may be, from there on we start recognizing the interest. So that is the change that has happened this quarter.
And second question is, how do you think the OPEX to AUM trending, let's say, over next 2 to 3 years for us?
I think from expenses cost to income, we believe that we still have the ability to drop cost to income by approximately 30 to 40 bips on a yearly basis. On a cost to AUM basis, I think that will work out to about 6 to 7 bips every year. And if some of the AI projects that we are taking up, which Rishi explained, if that starts pushing in and improves productivity and overall cost benefits, probably we would see some more cost benefits in terms of cost to asset. But as of now, we are holding in a cost to AUM range of about 6 to 7 bips on a yearly basis and cost to income of around 30 to 40 bips. Because if you look at it over the last 2 years, we would have dropped about 150 bips on cost to income. And when I look at cost to income over here, I'm including the ESOP cost, which would be approximately 15 crores a quarter when I'm doing a cost to income calculation. If you exclude that, I think our cost to income ratio would be in the range of about 33 to 34%.
Sure, sir. And last question, sir, just 2 data-keeping questions. So one is, if you can share 1+ GPD as of end of June 26, and what is the BT out rate for quarter one after 26?
The 1+ DPD is 7%, and in terms of
BT out, it's 5%.
It is 5%.
Which is an improvement of approximately 20 bips, right? 25 bips over the same period last year.
Sure, sir. Thank you, sir. That's it for my side.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touchtone telephone. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gandhi from Asian Market Securities. Please proceed.
Thank you for taking my question. So my first question was on the NHB drawdown. So what I heard was you've done about 740-750 crores of drawdown, and probably it was at a lower rate. So if we exclude that, what would be cost of funds for the quarter?
I think the overall blended cost is 750 crores at approximately 6.9%. Included in that is AHF of 149 crores at 4.3%. So I think the remaining 500 crores or 600 crores would have come in at...
excluding NHB borrowings.
Excluding NHB borrowings. I think excluding NHB borrowings, I think it will be in the range of about 7.4 to 7.45.
Okay. So I think last quarter this was 7.3 or 7. I'm not sure. Can you just help me with the last quarter number?
The last quarter number, I won't have it exactly now. I'll try to pull it during the call,
sure,
and give it back.
Sure. No worries. My second question was, even incremental yields, I think those have gone up. So I know you've taken a PLR rate cut, anything that is helping you, emerging, I understand, but anything apart from that, and how do we see incremental yields moving from here?
So incremental yields, as you would have seen, have remained flat. and I don't see any reason why the incremental yield should drop at any stage. And again, I will come back to the same point that if we are able to calibrate our urban emerging strategy in the medium term properly, which I don't see reason why it should not, then I don't see any movement, negative movement on the incremental yield, which means my spreads, which we have always maintained upward of 5.5%, will be maintained and secured. For example, illustratively, urban today gives me yields of anywhere between 11.5 to 12%, whereas emerging gives me an yield of anywhere between 14 to 14.8%. You know, so if this calibration of, even if in the medium term I reach 50-50, 50% of the business coming from urban and 50% from emerging, I am able to control incremental yields.
Got it, sir. The second one is on disbursements. So if I look at disbursements and other mortgages, I think that is down almost 22% versus home loans. You know, home loans have still grown. So is there anything that is impacting this growth, you know, apart from the recognition of disbursements?
No, sir. Non-home loans, slight reduction in the quarter, in the last two quarters, I would say, was a part of the design. Given the situation around you know, West Asia crisis and by philosophy, non-housing loans being slightly more riskier, I would say it was a conscious decision that we had taken. There is no specific reason why, you know, it should not get back in the coming quarters once the West Asia issue is resolved.
Got it. So do we expect that the growth will accelerate you know, in non-home loans probably into which?
I will not say that it's going to accelerate, but we will get back to normalcy, you know, incrementally doing a 70-30 kind of incremental disbursement on home versus non-home.
Okay,
currently we stand at about 76-24, and, you know, historically we've been doing 70-30. So this differential is on account of certain restriction in certain markets that we have internally, you know, adopted.
So this should start, you know, normalizing from 2Q, or this would be a little, you know, later the in effect 27.
See, ideally, you know, if you ask my view, I should ideally wait for the current quarter to see how the crisis is, okay, is going to stabilize. But from a quarter three perspective, it should be back to normalcy.
Got it. So the other question was, you know, when I look at your AUM per branch, so in Madhya Pradesh, you know, there seems to be a 3% YOY decline. And Telangana is also growing at 5-6%. I think the other states are doing pretty well, including Maharashtra. So any challenges that you're seeing in these two you know, states, Madhya Pradesh and Telangana? And is it something which is, you know, other specific, or is it something to do with the industry?
Unfortunately, readily I don't have the data, but I don't see any issue, because if there was a big, larger issue, it would have got highlighted. But I don't see any issue on decline on AUM per branch. There will be certain branches where we put restrictions, certain states where we put restrictions in terms of which were more export oriented. There you might see a slight decline, and this would be on account of those branches contributing at the overall level.
And so for medium term, you've maintained the guidance. I believe 2K is going to be pretty good. So for FY27, should we expect similar sort of AUM growth, 20% and PAT, you know, 20%?
Yes, as I indicated in my opening statement, for the current financial year, a 20% growth on AUM, a 20% growth on PAT, and a 17-18% on disbursement is what we will stand by. In the coming quarters, from an incremental disbursement perspective, the next three quarters will be a disbursement upward of or close to about 20%.
Got it, sir. That does answer my question. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sonam.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Akhil from Hornbill Capital. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi Rishi, and congrats on another set of steady numbers. If I look at your branches in the last two quarters, in the last quarter we opened only 5 branches, and in this quarter we've opened only 2 branches. So firstly, why is that? And secondly, are we still on track for our 40-50 per year branch opening guidance?
Hi, Akhil. Yes, we are completely on track. There were two reasons. See, quarter four, generally we avoid opening any new branches because it disturbs the apple cart completely. Generally, we do it between quarter two and quarter three because then we give them some time to stabilize. Having said that, you know, we kind of, I would say, not waited out, but, you know, we could have opened 5-7 branches in quarter one. We restricted to two. And as we look at the current quarter and the upcoming quarter, which is quarter three, we stand by our numbers of 45 to 50 branches.
Okay, so we will make it up for the loss that happened in the first quarter.
And there was no loss. We could have opened 5 branches. There are, you know, when you open branches, there are a lot of nitty-gritties around it, you know, agreement signing, identification. So towards the end of the month, the month that we are sitting on right, towards the end of June, we got a couple of proposals which got moved to July, you know, so that's about it.
Got it. And if I take your number of 2,360 crores of disbursement this quarter, your repayment rate seems to be jumping to around 21%. So did we see higher repayments this quarter? What happened?
No, but when you take the 2,360 crores of disbursement, you should add the 350 crores to AUM also. And once you do that, our overall repayment rate, if you look at it, it will be about a 16 to 16.5%.
Okay. Got it. And just lastly, the accounting change that we have done this quarter, is this an industry practice or are we the first one to do it in the industry?
No, sir. One is there is no change in the accounting. It is about from when do we start recognizing the interest. So we have moved from the check handover and disbursement, the old terminologies, to realization. I think everybody, most of the companies as we know today, have already moved or are in the process of moving to check realization. I think in the true spirit of RBI circular, you know, this was warranted. And we took a little more time because of systemic changes that we need to be done. But as I understand, and to answer your question, most of the companies have already moved to check realization.
Got it. Thank you so much, Rajesh and Rishi, and best of luck.
Thank you, Akhil.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Karan Gupta from Kavi Capital. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Appreciate the opportunity. Just one quick question on the capital structure. I know this has come up before, but just wanted to get management's current thoughts on, you know, this level of capital adequacy that we're maintaining. And are there any thoughts of returning some capital back to shareholders since it's dragging down our ROE significantly?
I think there's no current plan of handing it back to shareholders as of now. We believe we will require capital for growth, and that was the intention of raising 1,000 crores of primary in the IPO so that at least for the next 3-4 years, we are secure for our growth plans. So as of now, there is no reason to, or there's no thoughts of returning it back to shareholders. 40 to 43% capital adequacy, and if you see most of the peer sets, I think most of the peer group of companies who are doing affordable finance is sitting, because one element which we have to understand over here is the overall risk weight of the balance sheet. The overall risk weight of the balance sheet comes in about 45%, and that is one which helps us. So in case in future, not that anything is on the anvil, in case in future there is any changes in the risk weights, this can increase our capital adequacy. Further, what we also do from a pure risk management practice, we also set aside capital for operation risk. So we have internally calculated about 6 to 7% of capital that we set aside for operating risk as per best practice ICAP methodology. So these buffers are anyhow welcome. Yes, as of now, no plans of returning back capital.
So in that case, where do you expect the ROEs to be, you know, maybe 2 years down the line? Like, what is the spread that you expect, you know, to be increasing the ROE sequentially?
Yeah, so if you look at spreads, basically, as Rishi has said, suggested, we believe that over a 2-3 year period, we would be ending in the range of about 5.5. There is no appetite to go below that. And in terms of ROAs, if you look at our annual ROAs, it typically comes in at anywhere between 4.3 and 4.4%. And we believe that that is a good stable state ROA to look at. 4.3% is a good stable state ROA to look at. And going by that methodology, I think ROEs, if you look at the full year ROE of a couple of years down the line, we would be hitting around 17% ROE, which I think is the plan that we are working on.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Parth from DAM Capital. Please proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, just one thing I wanted to understand is how come our BT rates have been so controlled at 5% and have been improving past quite some time? I mean, what are the initiatives or the policies which you have implemented? Some color on that would be really helpful.
Great. So thank you, Parth. You know, yes, you're right. If I look at quarter one FY27 to FY26 comparison, we would have, improved our BT out rate by 50 bips. We've closed the quarter at about 5%. I would say there is nothing, you know, I can't single out one thing that would have impacted our retention efforts. I think it's a combination of a lot of things, right from our customer service teams at various critical branches to our central retention team of about 20 member teams. So every consumer who is desirous of moving out to a different company has to go through the retention team. The retention team is completely equipped with a lot of data analytics inputs in terms of, you know, segregating the customers into red, amber, green. You know, where are the customers who can get top up? Why is the consumer going? Is it only because of rates? So there are multiple factors that play around. These teams have been completely, you know, supported by giving them delegation on what are the yields they can drop for a consumer who is, you know, and that also depends on the MOB spent with us, the bounce rates, etc. So I would say, you know, Parth, there are multiple things that have gone, and it has taken us a while, you know, not that suddenly we've reached 5%. This effort started, or the initiative started, about 2 years back, and it's taken a lot of efforts for us to reach the 5% mark. So yes, all the benefit goes to the teams who are doing it.
Yes, that was my only question. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand over the conference to management for closing comments.
Thanks for all of you all for joining in at this late evening on a Friday. Thanks to Sanket and the DAM Capital team for hosting the call. As we end the quarter, we are reassuring on our near-term guidance of AUM growth of 20%, next three quarter disbursement growth in excess of 20%, and profit growth of 20%. And I'm sure that as the year pan out and as we have more discussions, we will be able to deliver that. Thanks a lot, and look forward to the quarter two call. Thank you very much, and have a good night.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
Thank you. On behalf of DAM Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.